Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode about niche ERP and competitive differentiators with Mr. Craig Skonechny. Craig is the president of the Friedman Corporation. And Friedman Corporation provides enterprise resource planning application software for the business needs of building and home product manufacturers. The company offers their Frontier ERP, which helps to manage customer orders, supply chain points, manufacturing, financial processes, as well as operational and distributions management. It is a database architecture supplier foundation for manufacturers' e-business, remote dealer system, and distribution channels. The company offers professional customer support and education services. It also offers doors, windows, cabinets, office, and upholstered furniture, fabricated metals, dimensional products, and window fashion industry solutions. The company was founded in 1980 and is based in Rosemont, Illinois, with additional offices in the United States and the UK. The Friedman Corporation operates as a subsidiary of Constellation Software, Inc. Jack, I'm so excited to have Craig on the podcast today.
I am too, Jonathan. Thank you. In this episode, we will further examine one manufacturer's insight and experience into successful ERP organizational change. Craig will share his thoughts on competitive differentiators in terms of ERP organizational change, process and methods, technology, and people. We will also discuss emerging technology and technological advancements in software development, the value of database architecture, end user training and education, customization and configuration, data conversion, and more. So Craig, as an accomplished professional with extensive business development experience in day-to-day operations from sales and proven experience streamlining efficiencies to bottom line profits, We are looking forward to borrowing and sharing your experience and insight. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jack and Jonathan. Grateful to be here.
Hey, without further ado, let's get into the conversation. And Craig, the first question I have, and I just like asking this question to many of our guests that's been on the show, but how would you define for our listeners ERP?
Outside of the common knowledge of it being an enterprise resource planning solution, we like to carve out from the frontier aspect, our ERP software is ideal for manufacturers who design, build, modify, and or assemble products to order. That's thanks to our configurator at the heart of our software. The frontier application really helps companies work smarter. And thus, the answer to your question of who we envision an ERP solution to be.
Craig, I want to actually dive into that because we've asked this question many times and I've never heard that answer. So when we talk about frontier ERP specifically, what is it that is the core that's serving the assembled home goods area that made to manufacture clients? Because you're pretty clear on who your customer is. So can you speak a little bit about that customer segment and how Frontier serves their core interests?
Sure. All of us have windows in our home. One of our segmented groups of customers is in the window industry. So if you can imagine if you're at a home improvement store, we're all looking at a window and we know what a window is. But from the assemble to order concept or make to order concept, we need to know that rough opening of your window. We need to know the operation of the window. Does it move left to right, up or down? Does it have low e-glass? These are all questions that are being asked at order entry that's driving the configuration on the back end. The configuration being that bill of material, the routing of the product through its production floors, and ultimately getting the product delivered to the customer on time. So knowing if there's some sort of manufacturing limitation, the software application or ERP solution knows that this dimension of the window has to go through this production line, thus it adds 1 or 2 days to that production delivery date, and allowing the consumer to get that response real time for the delivery of the product.
Pull it down to what does that look like for the consumer who's ordering something from a company that has Frontier? What's the benefit for them?
The benefit for them is getting on-time delivery at their true cost. If I were to walk into, for example, a home improvement store and I was ordering a custom window fashion, and I wanted to know if there's technology that's going to allow my window shades to close at 4 p.m., that technology is truly built into our ERP selection so that we can see that if these windows are east-facing as we're configuring the layout of that home, we'll know that you probably don't need the custom scheduled windows to operate on the west side of your domicile because it's up against another brick wall. So that kind of concept allows the user to actually see and understand the different options based on the makeup of the layout of their home. So if you really want to bring that back to not just window fashions, you could also think about that in the cabinet industry. If I'm actually laying out the dimensional layout of my kitchen and there's limitations of where a door is, where a window is, and being able to see that and understand what it's going to look like in my home is some of the technology that our application allows for.
I think that's awesome. So you can really build and fabricate in real time with the client, if I'm understanding
that's you right. correctly. That's exactly right. We're integrated with best of breed applications that are in the window industry, the window fashion industry, the door industry. So the tool that the consumer is actually seeing might be that application that's at the dealer's location or at that home improvement store, but our integration behind the scenes is our configurator. So the options that they're selecting are the true options that the manufacturer has in their system. So the sense of it being one system of record is a great point to talk to, that there is no, let me see if this data is going to port over to the ERP. Because it is the ERP, it just has a different face that may have the brand of that home improvement store or the manufacturer or a go-to-market product line. So they're really able to control the user experience with our configurator at the back end. And the configurator is truly the core of our frontier ERP solution that separates us from other solutions.
So Craig, just to dig a little deeper with our listeners into your product, I want to share a quote from your website. And that was, quote, "Our advanced multi-platform technology and modular application design support customized enterprise-wide solutions to meet the unique requirements of the designed, engineered, manufactured, or assembled to order business. As integrated single database architecture supplies the foundation for your e-business, remote dealer systems, and distribution channels," end quote. Can you explain more on the value of a single database architecture and maybe the exact database that you use and why? Is that something you can share with our listeners?
Most definitely. What I would like to reinforce is that it's a single point of truth. It's one database data set. That database being a DB2 database that resides on the iSeries. We have a series of technology that's through web services, stored procedures, and APIs, we're able to take advantage of that one system of record. Though it's being housed in the manufacturer's ERP, we allow through these web services you to port in and actually access that data. So we're really emphasizing eliminating those pain points. If it's an inside sales, or if it's your field sales team, or a dealer or reseller network, they're all pointing into that one system of record. Thus, there isn't a disparate system that has to bolt on to our ERP. We're offering that ERP and that integration to another application. And I'm really speaking to what I alluded to earlier, that they have the ability to control that look and feel, that user experience. Why is that advantageous? It's that if I'm giving you a price to the customer, it's the price. It's not that the dealer or the outside sales rep has an old version of that pricing schedule. They have the most accurate bill of material that might be in there. So if, for example, if I'm selling a product in Denver, Colorado, and I'm selling a window product, it recognizes the fact that I'm selling that product into a high altitude. Thus, I need to insert breather tubes because of the fact that the customer's location, the zip code of where that dealer is doing that quote, is in that geographical area, as opposed to if the dealer is in Miami, Florida, and I'm selling a window. In that case there, I need to ensure that it's hurricane proof. So having that technology is crucial to ensure that we're selling the right product to the consumer.
Craig, this is fantastic, right? The ability to see these things in real time and provide that to the point of sale, even the point of conversation. And you've mentioned, from my perspective, a few times this word integrated. And you've mentioned that Frontier is the configurator. And I'm curious, how do you see that as the source of your competitive advantage and your competitive differentiator? And how does that relate to your partnership with IBM?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. Thanks for that, Jonathan. It really revolves around the fact of if I had that unique characteristic in other ERPs, I would have to have a separate SKU or a separate product number for each individual characteristic. If I were to talk about a wagon, if a wagon that my child is pulling is a red wagon, I might have to have one part number for that wagon, as opposed to the green wagon, it's another part number. So this allows the manufacturer to have one system of record, that being the wagon, and then depending on the unique characteristics of that, I'm able to not only identify what the bill of material is, but the cost and any sort of cost plus pricing that I may want to invoke to ensure that my margins are within acceptable range to not only to the dealer, but also to the consumer because of its unique value. It's not a unique SKU from that point.
Yeah, could you talk about the role of IBM? And it sounds like you're relieving the creation of hundreds of thousands of additional SKUs for customization, as I understand it.
That's right. Yeah, from the IBM perspective, to truly talk about the technology stack, as though that the back end, the database, is in the DB2 data set that is a database that has been long nurtured by our relationship with IBM, the technology expands upon that. which is through their server application called WebSphere. And WebSphere allows us to have a more user-friendly, modern look and feel of the application. And thus, it's really hitting on what I alluded to earlier, the web services that really controls that user experience. If, you know, for example, if I wanted to walk through and actually see a color swatch of that paint or that wood grain, I'm actually able to do that. And we're using that and harnessing that power through the power platform of IBM and their application, WebSphere. And that's our relationship there with them, is that we see this IBM platform to be one that is not susceptible as much as other platforms, such as Windows, for example. As we all know, a lot of in this COVID world, a lot of companies are being impacted by ransomware or security threats. We have, with our experience, have seen that this IBM platform isn't at the top of the list for organizations or lack of better terms, groups that are looking to infiltrate manufacturers or others' networks.
Well, thanks, Greg. That's very helpful information. You know, we took the first few questions here to introduce Frontier, the product, and we wanted to share that with our listeners. And now I think Jonathan and I would like to slightly switch gears and have you share some of your successes. We know that you and your team have a sound product and a sound delivery process in terms of implementation. So we want to borrow some of that experience from you. So we'll switch gears and talk for a few minutes about process. And to kick things off, my question for you would be, how would you describe your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates in the field, just in general? Do you have any general comments on that?
Sure. I recently read an article that says, 67% of customers in manufacturing and distribution rate their implementation as successful or very successful. So that's really concerning. It's why isn't it 100%? And it's our position that it has everything to do with the implementation process. You know, it's important to take things one step at a time, set expectations with realistic planning timeframes. It's that project charter that I believe, and it's been my experience, that if that's not set from the very beginning, there isn't going to be a successful implementation. So that's one of the key factors in our 8 steps of Compass methodology, which is the implementation methodology that we've been using for nearly 40 years. It's to set truly those objectives and goals and finding ways to measure that metrics and revisiting that every step of the way as you're implementing the ERP. It's like anything else. A project is not only owned by the ERP software vendor, but it's truly by establishing a steering committee within the organization so that they have ways to see as we're progressing through the project that those milestones are being met and understanding what those hurdles and pitfalls are in a constant basis. So we're always working through that process. And through our Compass methodology, we have what we like to deliver at key milestones, a process assessment document, which is, it's the truth. It's the fact. It's not hidden behind any sort of cultural or political barriers. It's the data. The data is the one set of truth that speaks to where we are with the project. You know, we see that as being one of the key factors in measuring the success of that and really getting that above that 67th percentile for our customer base. It's truly one of the things I like to say is that we begin that implementation from go when we get that initial request for a quote. We understand that we're right then and there being measured. So we understand that vendor is, you know, it's all about the vendor experience that customer, that prospect is having. It's, we like to say that it's not about the application. It's about the consulting and the business level knowledge that we know in those industries. And truly, if it's in that building industry where it's cabinet, windows, doors, window fashions, that's where it could be another ERP. It's not just about the application. Our consultants understand those businesses. I'm hoping that shines some light on that, Jonathan.
Yeah, you know what? I think you answered more than, I think you shined a spotlight on it more than just a flashlight. I'm sort of struck with your answer. As Jack and many of our listeners know, I really geek out on process and implementation. So one of the things I heard you mention, and I want to poke a little further on, is it's not just about the technology, it's about how we bring that to bear to solve business problems. And from the sales process, it's really about implementation. And as I sit with that, it's such a stark difference for me than other ERP approaches. So I'm curious, how do you see your implementation process with Compass and your 8 steps, but just that whole mindset and cultural approach that you just described as a differentiator? And what does that enable you to do with your clients?
Yeah, great question, Jonathan. It's something that we invoke from the initial go before there was even a contract signed. We really work towards getting past the barriers, and the barriers in many cases are the decision maker that's making that selection for the ERP. So we really like to roll up our sleeves and do an on-site visit. We have the mindset that we're awarded the opportunity to implement the ERP, and we're working with the actual doers, those that are out on the shop floor, those that are running order entry, not the vice president of manufacturing, not the vice president of sales. It's the resource that's keying in the data or reporting that production was complete. We want to understand those challenges and hurdles and pitfalls that they not only have in their current ERP, but the processes and the tasks that are being conducted in some other disparate system, something such as I do X, I do Y, I do Z, then I update this spreadsheet, then I turn in this piece of paper, and then it gets reported into the ERP. These are the little nooks and crannies, the golden nuggets that we want to bring into our implementation process assessment that we then turn into the steering committee, those that are actually part of that ERP selection process. We're really coming in almost as like a psychiatrist or psychologist, if that makes sense, where we're interviewing, where we'll understand the problems that someone might not be willing to share with their manager, right? So of course it's, you know, that process and that interview isn't formal. It's just truly saying, let me sit side saddle and watch what you do for a living so I can understand how I can make your day go easier. And that's the intent of what we brand as our implementation process opportunity. Because we take that information, and once we're awarded the opportunity to implement the ERP, that becomes part of the project charter. That's the details of the education opportunities that we're going to instill as we're actually implementing the ERP. It's the project assignments. It's the suggestions of the call of action that perhaps that initial steering committee and or decision maker just don't realize that this is the opportunity to get a return on their investment. It may not just be about, I need on-time delivery. With that said, it doesn't necessarily all mean that we have to chew it all off and bite it all off at once, and that's part of the initial implementation. It's that forward thinking of what is the next hurdle that we can overcome for that organization. If I could talk a little bit about our implementation methodology, as I said earlier, we call it Compass, and it's an 8-step methodology providing the client with a pathway to success for the implementation. The program, you know, guides for the development and implementation through that steering committee, those stakeholders, those subject matter experts, those that actually have the authority and the power to make things happen, but all along realizing that they're all part of that project team, that if there's any hurdle, they understand what that hurdle is. So that's part of our Compass methodology, where we're constantly feeding them that process assessment through what we call a PAD document, so they can see where we're truly at with that. So it's giving them a framework to educate their team as they're learning and they're implementing the software. One of the big things that we like to do is, I've shown you how to do it, but let me have you write a how to do that task. If it's, how do I cancel a check? How do I post a voucher in your ERP solution? That one subject matter expert needs to be able to educate others within their organization. So that is one of the things that we like to do, though it may seem a little old school. It's writing that document that standard operating procedure, which an organization may not actually have within their processes today. But during that implementation of the ERP and after, they'll be able to onboard additional resources with those standard operating procedures. So all the way through from the soup to nuts, the cradle to grave, these documents and education are happening by the nature of the implementation of the ERP application. Right up into the point of where we would conduct a conference room pilot. That conference room pilot generally consists of, it could be a one day's worth of orders that were put into that legacy system, running that simultaneously into our ERP, or it also could be a week's worth. It truly matters. We're looking for a heavy volume. We're really trying to exercise every aspect of the system, from order entry to manufacturing to procurement to shipping to RMAs, that full gamut. We're really looking to touch the unknowns, the things that we didn't discover in that initial IPA, the things that we didn't discover when we interviewed your resources. A lot of things end up coming out in that preparation for that conference room pilot. In some cases, it may mean a round two, another conference room pilot, just to shake out any bugs so that we can ensure a successful implementation.
Yeah, Craig, this is fantastic. And for all the other process geeks out there, I would recommend they listen to this answer again, because I know I'm going to. If I'm summing up everything I'm hearing, it's the content of the ERP that you actually install is equally important to the process by which you do that. And you collect those nuggets of wisdom from how people engage with this and bring it all the way up to the steering committee through your Compass process. So on our podcast, we talk about the legs of the ERP, the technology, the people in the process. And right. So it sounds like you're attending to all three legs of this stool in real time.
That's right. I would agree with that, Jonathan.
So Craig, question for you regarding, you know, the implementation process and being able to differentiate between out-of-the-box usage and software customization. How do you and your team and Frontier ERP address that, right? Because there's a balance. I know that you folks are very good in your niche and your industry, and you know the best practices. And I'm sure that you've been into new clients to do an implementation. And there's that balance between true competitive differentiators from the perspective of your client versus best practice. And that leads to all sorts of conversations around just going with the out-of-box solutions provided by Frontier versus customization. So what are your thoughts on ERP software customization? And customization can be good in order to better fit the operational processes, but isn't too much a danger?
Yeah, I would agree with that, Jack, from that standpoint, where too much modification could then propose support issues. We want to eliminate the potential where the customer doesn't receive the support from the ERP vendor that they deserve, right? So what we've done is, over the years, we've identified that the vast majority of our customers are looking to modify the user experience. So one of the things that we've done is, through the set of different order entry screens, if it's procurement or true sales order entry, or if it's master file data order entry, we allow them to control that look and feel. So you can kind of think about it as a design studio. And it doesn't require a technology expert. It doesn't require a programmer. It's quite interactive, where if you wanted, I love to use this analogy, if you had a credit application and it worked in this order, that customer name, address, zip code, you know, financial data, and that's on your credit application, well, I need to get that into my ERP. I could allow that customer master screen to follow that same pecking order. So if I had two monitors open, I have my credit card application on one, and then I have my customer master on the other. I can walk through one to the next and key in that data instead of hopping around from one system value to another. So I'm really controlling that user experience from that standpoint. A lot of what we would see from the customization, it may be customer facing, where it might be the order acknowledgement, or it's the advanced ship notification that gets sent to the customer, that notifying them that the product is on its way. We also allow enhancement. I want to use the word enhancement as opposed to modification, we're giving them the tool to control that user experience. Outside of that, the user experience, we do allow some modification in our software where it comes to integration to, I'll call, best of breed applications. So if we needed the ability to say, for example, I'm releasing product to the shop floor, though I'm releasing that schedule, I need to also send G codes to a machine that's operating a fenestration machine, I can pass those values to it. So it's truly about that integration, and I'm eliminating the need for a modification because I'm giving them a set of data that the best of industry is already looking to receive. So that's one of the big things that we're looking to do, is to eliminate the need for the modification by giving them either the ability to change the user experience or to feed the data to a best of breed of application.
Sure. Craig, one of the things in my formal research, I've been fortunate to study many, many different ERP vendors and their implementation methodologies. And I was speaking to one ERP vendor executive lately, and the way they see it, they actually have a number, a percent, where they say, you know, if we go in and we do our due diligence and our discovery, and we see that there's a certain percentage of customization, we're not willing to go over that because that either means, one, we're just not a good business modeling fit for the organization, or two, they don't agree with what we would call standard best practice, right? So they have this allowance for customization, but their perspective is if there's too much going over, and they gauge this, they have a way of determining what percentage of their product has to be modified. I guess approach is that if they go over a certain percentage of customization, it's just not a good fit on either side, right? It's either too much customization, you're not taking advantage of the best practices, and you're going to have other issues with customizations and maintenance and that sort of thing, or we're truly just not a good fit for you in the way that you run your business. What are your thoughts on that? And would you say, if not formally, do you have some magic number, 1%, 20% customization or somewhere in between, that if you find yourself in that space where the customer is requesting a lot of software customization, that it's just probably doesn't make sense?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jack. I honestly don't know the percentage of net new opportunities that have come our way that we weren't able to identify a modification that we would not consider for base functionality. So one thing that we have done with our existing customer base, if there's an opportunity that's good for the common user community, we'll definitely be looking to add that to our base functionality of the application. If sure. It's a situation where the software change that they're asking to be made, we, of course, would allow that, we would create a hook or an endpoint that would allow them to get the data perhaps that they need out of our database and feed it to their custom code. But that's truly where I would see the line to be drawn. It would not be part of our base software application. But as far as the percentage, I really don't have a gauge of, and it's because of the fact that I don't have that at my fingertips, it isn't a high percentage of you know, net new opportunities that have come our way, where we weren't able to find base functionality that would fit the business problem that they're trying to provide a solution for.
Sure. So, Craig, next question I have is, how important is accurate data conversion, and how does your team work to ensure that during the ERP implementation process? Information systems is all about data, and data has to get in there in some way, shape, or form, whether it's from QuickBooks or Excel or from another ERP system. But how important is that process, and how important is it that accurate data conversion takes place?
So it's paramount that we have that data, that the data is integral to the process. We could, of course, manually key in that data, but it's an integral piece of having that initial data set getting into the application. One of the great things I love about doing that is getting that data out of the legacy system. It allows us to ask the question, and the question is always why. Why do I need this data? You may have an organization that has millions of SKUs that are in their legacy system. Why am I porting that over to the new ERP? So it truly welcomes a housekeeping opportunity. So not only for, let's call it product, any master file, if it's a customer is no longer a customer of ours, a vendor, we're no longer doing business with them. We're no longer selling that product. It allows us to do that initial cleanup, that housekeeping of that data. Getting that data into the system is truly one of the first steps that we would be looking to exercise in our Compass methodology, because of all of the facts of having that data is critical to the configurator. I need to know when I'm choosing that product, and that product being a color, a piece of material, a dimension, I need to know which part to call. Without that data, I can't move forward. So it's really an important piece there, Jack, to have that data and to have the integrity of the data to be right.
Absolutely. Thanks, Craig. You know, we talked a little bit about this idea of customization versus out of the box. And, you know, I think that balance has everything to do, or a lot to do, with finding the right ERP system, right? So the right ERP selection. And, you know, I think the fact is that ERP vendors such as yourself, you have true differentiators, and that's what we like to share with our listeners. And, you know, you folks have your Compass, you know, your 8-step implementation methodology, and you have some other differentiators with your technology, and we'll get to some of those here in a couple of minutes. But would you agree that ERP selection is one of the most crucial decisions to be made during an ERP organizational change endeavor, and why?
Yeah, I would definitely agree, Jack. It's less about the ERP selection and more for about the willingness to change, you know, getting clarity around the organizational goals. It's what I was attempting to speak to. It's that project charter. What am I looking to provide a solution for? Am I looking to have a better go-to-market strategy so that my customer, my consumer, can be in their living room making that selection? Or do I require them to go into that big box store to make that selection in order to get to the selection of the product that they're looking to purchase? So it's more, in my mind's eye, about the willingness to change and identifying what's part of that project charter, what that initial return on investment is going to be by going to another ERP. Otherwise, I should just look inward at to what else I can change within the organization outside of just the ERP selection.
Craig, I really love that answer about the organizational connectivity with ERP. When you're looking at that very challenge, what are the key factors you look at when helping choose how to engage for ERP organizational change, as Nessel and Associates calls it?
Sure. Yeah, one of the things that we like to say that we're really focusing on, how do we police or draw lines around the process, and how do we invoke change as business consultants, not as software developers, change within the organization that are for the common good. One of the things that we, of course, are looking to understand is, are we a good fit for the organization? Do we have the right functionality? We are always looking to show that we have that reliability. You know, reliability means if with the IBM platform, we have the availability to do what's known in the industry as high availability, meaning if I have to do a backup of my system, and I'm a 24/7 shop, I have the technology that allow for those backups to happen real time and allow for data analysis to happen while production is still ongoing. We're also looking to instill in our customers that we have the experience. We have the experience in those building industries, the windows, the doors, the cabinets, manufacturers. We also like to stress that we're not going to be swallowed up by a larger organization. We've already run through that process. We're part of Constellation Software, as you stated, as the largest software company in Canada. They're an organization that holds, they don't divest organizations. So we're in it for the long haul. We've been around for, July will be 41 years, and we're looking to go another 41 years. We're looking forward to it.
So Craig, can ERP implementations be risky? And if so, how? And how do you counter those risks?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, based on the article that I read a couple days back, that 67% feel that it was a success. What we see the biggest challenges being is that it's not something like set it and forget it. You have to constantly be feeding it. And going through the process, you have to understand where we are at with the project. where we are with the implementation of the ERP solution. Thus, the big focus is always on our Compass methodology. Even after the fact, once a customer goes live with our ERP system, we actually do a post-implementation audit where we'll come back in and we'll see and ensure the steering committee and the owners of the organization, those that are running the organization, that they're not going back to their old ways. They're not using the old bag of tricks or finding ways to go around the system or skirt the system. So that, you know, for us to truly measure the success of the ERP, it's done at a later point, coming back in through that post-implementation audit to remeasure the success. Not that we went live, that we've actually changed the organization by what we initially identified as part of our project charter. And as we talked about, as part of the implementation process assessment, we're getting down to the doers, those that are actually in the system being the processes and understanding what those processes are. So we're always looking to revisit after the fact, if that makes sense, where we may have accomplished the initial project charter, but what is project charter 2? And we have that information from not only our initial implementation process assessment, but our post-implementation audit that we would conduct after the go-live to ensure the success and the ongoing success of the utilization of the Frontier ERP application.
Yeah, and that 67% is not good. And based on most objective vendor-neutral research, that's actually on the high end, but that's certainly not acceptable. Most executives and investors wouldn't accept those odds. So yeah, the ERP implementations are risky.
Absolutely. And Craig, you, in your answer, I heard you talk about organizational change for the people. So let's turn to this section now in our talk around people. Ultimately, when you're talking about ERP organizational success, how do you define success? And how do you define it to the people who actually have to use that system and to the executives and the steering committee that are leading it?
Yeah, what we're looking to do is to implement and ensure that the implementation is a success, that if the users aren't happy, change isn't going to happen in the organization. So it really becomes part of that initial review of what the users are doing from the beginning, understanding what they do well in their current ERP or outside of the system, and putting a project charter to actually ensure that we're delivering upon that.
And so, Craig, just to follow up on that then, exactly how would you define then and describe the success? I mean, what does that mean to you? If you had to describe to, you know, an executive team or a group of investors that's implementing ERP, what would be your own personal definition of success so that, you know, at the end of the day, in 12 months, they look back and they can say, yes, objectively, we are successful?
Right. It would be identified within that project charter. So if we're looking to, for example, have an e-commerce solution, knowing that implementing the e-commerce solution of our ERP is going to, the return of investment is going to be X, knowing where we've met, did we meet that goal? Did we exceed that goal? That would be the true measurement of success. Did we meet the initial goal? Why would we go to an ERP selection if there isn't an objective or a goal set? We need to understand what that goal is from the beginning in order to have the data to measure against it. If we didn't meet the goal, what are the obstacles or the hurdles that were missed? Well, the answer really should be there are none, because we are transparent through our Compass methodology as we're providing that steering committee, that owner, with that process assessment that's showing where we are with the implementation. And that is also part of our post-implementation audit. We're going to give them that data before they ask for it, because we understand why they purchased the ERP, why they were looking to go through the task of a new ERP selection.
So your definition of a success would be, and I just think this is an interesting topic, your definition of success would be, and I really like what you said with your approach with being objective about it, right? And that's using KPIs both pre and post implementation. So, you know, if you sit down with your steering team committee and you say, okay, our on-time delivery or on-time completion or whatever those metrics may be, or our downtime, you know, is X number now, and post go live, we have a better system in place, better business intelligence, And we've seen that all of those KPIs have increased, right? So maybe it's something simple like our time to close month end. We're going from 2 weeks to 2 days or whatever it is. So you're using very objective metrics that you compare both pre and post implementation to help gauge this idea of success.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's a great way to summarize it. You know, so those key performance indicators that are going to tell us that this was a success, and it could be not only the initial implementation of the ERP, but I love to call it those after the fact. It's those golden nuggets that we've identified during some of our initial audits, interviews with the user community to understand where the organization should perhaps expand those KPIs that they may not be measuring today. You know, great example that you offered there is that on-time delivery. And I think we kind of started the conversation off with that is if I'm the consumer and I'm in a big box store and you tell me the product is going to be here on May 7th, well, it better be here on May 7th. Well, how do I ensure that I'm able to meet that promise date? There's so much that pyramids or spider webs behind that that's happening at that manufacturing side. It could be to the level of, is my vendor delivering my product on time? Well, how do I ensure that I'm able to measure that KPI? If, you know, I write something down on a piece of paper and then I turn it into the shop floor supervisor, and then when he gets to it, he can key the data into the ERP as opposed to with an ERP system such as ours, Frontier, I can do it real time. I have barcode technology where I can scan that right off of the brown truck showing that the product is delivered. So I could actually measure that and see my true on-time delivery using the technology that I have today.
Sure.
So what we're always looking for is ways to, you know, if you're doing something more than once, you should always be looking for ways to automate it. And that's why you should leverage technology, right?
Yeah. Craig, so I want to put you on the spot a little bit. So if the company's KPIs, so let's say their definition of success is based on KPIs pre and post snapshots. And if I implement an ERP and according to the metrics, so my on-time completion, my on-time delivery, you know, all those numbers went up and per my KPIs, I met that goal. But what if it took an extra 30% in cost and another 40% in time to get there? Is your ERP still successful?
I would definitely say that the ERP is successful. The implementation of the ERP is successful. We would look to understand why it took longer than the initial assembly of the implementation. There's always learnings that happen. It's that information that we didn't get initially, and we're looking to bring that to the steering committee as soon as possible, so that it isn't the elephant in the room. That's part of our Compass methodology. We're feeding that information to the steering committee, the owners of the organization, so they understand that this project is taking longer, that it does require additional information, such as, you know, we realize now that the data isn't able to come out of the legacy ERP, or we don't have the data that we thought we have. So it's all about communication. It's all about openness. It's all about transparency. So we're not looking for it to be the 11th hour to drop that big bomb. We're truly looking to identify ways to, as business partners, to identify those hurdles so that it doesn't become a last minute ask for that. We need more time to implement the application. The long term, I believe we could turn the table and say that had we not made this change, you will continue to pay for it. So you would have to look at it and measure what it would take if you don't make a change. And so that's where we would have that conversation with the steering committee to understand if, from their standpoint, is it a go, no go, change direction, or do we stay to the marching orders to implement that component or that piece of the ERP that's going to be one of the KPIs that they're looking to change?
Sure. So Craig, you mentioned, and I know you and your team put a lot of emphasis on training, and you mentioned when we were talking about your Compass methodology that, you know, how much value you put in organizational learning and stakeholder education and training. And in fact, I believe you mentioned yourself that it's not just about the training, it's about the effective transfer of that training to the workplace, right? So it's taken the training outside of the very formal environment of a, you know, a classroom environment and transferring that out to the floor where it's effective. Can you talk a little bit about how do you and your team ensure effective and efficient training during an ERP implementation process?
Sure. Yeah, one of the components of our implementation strategy is exactly that. It's training. If we're looking to identify that subject matter expert that could then become the captain of that area so that it allows them to become by nature the most knowledgeable resource in the organization about that subject. And it has less to do about what buttons to click in the ERP, but knowing and policing that standard operating procedure of how do I, for example, return product to a vendor. Anyone can create the document that says, you know, click here, click there, then it sends it back to the vendor. But there's other data that we might perhaps want to actually measure. Well, why is it being returned to the vendor? Well, it was scratched, it was dented, it was marred. Knowing that type of information in our screen is actually going to help us measure and build up our KPIs of, is this the right vendor of choice? So this is one of the ways that we're looking to instill, not just by formalized training, sit in the classroom and here's the button to click. It's how do I instill change within your organization? And helping the team understand why we're asking for this information is more important to educate than clicking a button.
So Craig, you mentioned this briefly about when Jack asked you what happens when a project is 30% over time and budget, how you bring this up to the steering committee. In my world, I often call this course correction. And so it's one thing to alter the course. It's another thing to, in my view, to have your executives and your team realize that course correction is what's natural to happen. So when you're talking about ERP implementation, nothing's perfect in business transformation. How do you set that up in the context of your Compass process, in your mindset, in the way you communicate with your stakeholders?
Right. We do part of our implementation strategy. We host and instill within the organizations that we have to have this steering committee that understands the facts of the data. So there's a series of metrics that we're posting that anyone within the organization on both sides can see. So it's not about how do I get over the hurdle or the challenge of communicating this. It's the organization that has the ERP should already be aware and know that there's a chance or need for course directional change. It's not news to them because they're involved in the project, Jack. So we're not looking to drop the elephant in the room or the bomb in the room because they're already part of the project. We're really building a relationship, a long-term relationship with our customer. Without doing that and making that part of our core ERP implementation strategy, it will not be a success. So we're in constant communication with our customers through Zoom meetings, through postings, through chat capabilities, through daily, weekly, and monthly calls, even after the implementation. It really goes back to the communication and the relationship and nothing to do with the software itself. It's all about the business relationship.
So Craig, if we may, I'd like to now turn the discussion here for a question and talk about technology. In terms of the Frontier product specifically, what are some of the emerging technologies that you're actually building upon or plan to build or incorporate over the next 1 to 3 years? This is a question we get a lot from our clients, and it's such a fun topic in emerging technologies. But any thoughts there? Or do you have anything fun or exciting with AI or AR or any other emerging technology that you plan on building into your platform?
Sure. It's definitely expanding our footprint in the e-commerce space. We recognize that we are not only the ERP, we're that one system of record. One of the advantages of our application through our web services is giving the consumer, I'll use the term, that Amazon experience, that they're able to see their shopping cart, knowing where that product is actually being delivered. One of the insights of what we're expanding our portfolio is to ensure that they're able to see the product after it's left the door where is it at? Knowing that if it's through that tracking of the product, now that it's left and it's being transferred through a third-party logistics company or another carrier of the like, being able to see where that product is. So we're able to give it from that kind of that cradle to grave kind of concept is one of the biggest components of what we're looking to expand our footprint with. In addition to that, we recognize that we are not the best of breed when it comes to tax validation. So we've aligned ourselves with a business partner just as of recent. So to ensure that no matter where the product is being delivered, that you have the appropriate tax to truly prevent that manufacturer from any sort of state or local audit, knowing that we have that geographical location of where that product is being delivered and calculating that appropriate tax is another application that's emerging. And we have a handful of customers that are using that today. And as every day goes by, we're learning more and more about how that's critical to their business. That, if you were to ask me this question 18 months ago, I wouldn't care about the tax implications, but now it's the problem for our customers. Now it's our problem. Thus, we've worked out a recent solution for that. Not that we are managing the data, but we have integration to that best of breed application. So when that order is coming in from that consumer that might be in Denver, Colorado, or might be in Miami, Florida, we know what that appropriate tax that needs to be calculated for that consumer or that dealer or perhaps the manufacturer that might be selling direct.
Craig, this is one of my favorite questions to ask. And in closing, if you had to distill down your experience, expertise, success, and challenges in this field into one or two sentences of advice for our listeners, and that can be everyone from organizational change practitioners, PE professionals, change researchers, and implementers, what would you tell them? What would you want to share?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jonathan. I think it all starts from why do I want to change? It's inevitable that no things are always going to be the same. I need to adapt to the new environment. The organization may need to change. And if I need to change, how do I ensure that I'm able to draw a box around that change? Thus, the selection for an ERP solution that perhaps allows me to adapt a bit from that user experience on the look and feel of the application because I'm moving from one system to another, but still being abide by that initial need to change, whatever that KPI is, what that return on investment is. How do I ensure that I'm making that change? Software technology provides that. But without the buy-in from the top down, change will not happen. So I think I would summarize that it ensures in order for any project to be successful, ERP implementation, you need to have buy-in from the top down within the organization to make it a successful ERP implementation.
Great insight. Craig, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. And for our listeners, please check out www.friedmancorp.com. Did I get that right, Craig?
You sure did. Thank you for that.
And we'll put links in the show notes too. There's some great literature and information that we'll share. Craig, we wish you and your team the best of luck and continued success. Again, thank you so much and be well.
You as well. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you guys and your listeners.
Thanks, Craig.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to, and we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and 3, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.